Bruchlinie. Konflikte unserer Zeit. Eine Podcast-Serie von Studierenden der Universität Erfurt.
Hello and welcome everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Ultima Iratio, your podcast about questions of war and peace. Today's episode is the first installment of our new series, Bruchlinien, Konflikte unserer Zeit. In this series, we'll try to shed a light on all different kind of conflicts around the globe. And we'll start off with one of the most interesting, complex, and ever-evolving conflicts currently. Namely, we'll be discussing the conflict between the People's Republic of China and the Republic of China, more commonly known as Taiwan. I'm your host, Arthur Yu. I'm new on the podcast, and I'm pleased to be joined by my fellow co-host, Fabian Schulte.
For this episode, we'll focus on the Taiwanese perspective on the situation and want to better understand how Taiwan views itself.
For this, we're very pleased to be joined by a guest who can tell us all about it. Please welcome Dr. Chia Yuliang.
Well, thanks for having me. My name is Chia Yuliang, and I got my PhD in international relations at the University of Sussex in the UK. And at the moment, I'm a short-term postdoctoral fellow at the European Research Center for Contemporary Taiwan at the University of Tübingen.
So without further ado, I'd say let's dive right in. So let me give our listeners a very brief initial context for understanding the Taiwan-China conflict. So Taiwan has belonged to China, then back then Imperial China, since the 17th century, after a lost war against the Japanese at the end of the 19th century. China had to cede the Taiwan to Japan. So after the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the subsequent surrender of the Japanese Empire, Japan had to return Taiwan into Chinese possession. The issue was that there was no central government left due to the ongoing civil war between the CPC, the Chinese Communist Party, under Mao Zedong, and the KMT, under the leadership of Chiang Kai-shek. So by the end of 1949, it was clear that the deeply unpopular KMT would lose the Chinese civil war. Therefore, Chiang Kai-shek and his followers decided to flee to Taiwan and to eventually reconquer and reinstate control over the entire territory of China. Since then, we're experiencing this stalemate of the Chinese Civil War, with tensions rising and falling throughout the past 75 years. So the current Sino-Taiwan relations have been subject to, I'd say in my opinion, a lot of fear-mongering, especially from Western media. So how much of that can we actually believe? How dangerous is the situation? And is war an actual possible or likely scenario?
Okay, so, well, thanks for the question. Well, the current state of the Sino-Taiwan relations is subjected to different interpretations, at least, well, from the Chinese perspective, by which I mean the understanding of the authority of the People's Republic of China. That relations would be very different from how the Taiwanese public in general understand it. Okay, so from the Chinese perspective, Taiwan is a territory of the Chinese nation that is not yet unified into a Chinese state, which the People's Republic of China represents, legally represents. And then this is a situation created by the civil war between the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese Nationalist Party, or more commonly known as KMT, abrupted by the outbreak of the Korean War and the creation of the post-World War II East Asian situation. And finally, with the general Chinese nationalist approach proposed by President Xi Jinping under the name of China Dream, or the rejuvenation of Chinese nation, Taiwan to be unified would be a necessary condition for this objective, the rejuvenation of Chinese nation. So that is the kind of way how Chinese authorities see the Sino-Taiwan relations. But from Taiwan's perspective, there are more than one positions. One is those in Taiwan who they are the minority now, who would be more supportive of an ultimate unification with China. But even for these unificationists, they see this relation between China and Taiwan in a particular way. They see it as a kind of a stalemate between two governments that do not recognize each other's sovereignty, right? And then the majority of the Taiwanese people considers Taiwan under the constitution of the Republic of China is an independent state. That's the most popular view among Taiwanese public. And then there are finally the more determined independentists. They will see ROC just a, if not a foreign power, it would also at least be a transitional stage for the future of Taiwan. Now, as you can see that from the Taiwan's, from the different Taiwan's perspective, none of them can be accepted by the Chinese authority. So that is why that these relations is unresolved. And as China sees it as an unfinished civil war, which, by the way, recently was announced again by a diplomat from China in France. So, and also because Taiwan's lack of international recognition, at the moment there are only 11 states that recognize Taiwan. So effectively, Taiwan is a de facto state, and that undermines Taiwan's, well, rights to defend itself if China considers military aggression is a possible choice. So basically, China considered a military action is legitimized, and the question is only whether it is doable or not at the moment.
Since we're talking about the Taiwanese perspective on this episode, what about the Taiwanese people? Do they perceive the possibility of an actual war as likely?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question. Well, in general, and for a longer period of time, on this question, the opinion in Taiwan is divided, right? There are, on the one hand, a lot of people believe for a long time that since the situation has been created since the Korean War, and since China has not launched an aggression, a full-fledged aggression, for such a long time, 50, 60, 70 years, then a lot of people would think that, no, it won't happen. They are just making verbal threats. And there are other arguments that support this view. For example, there is a high degree of economic interdependence between Taiwan and China. And then for China to attack Taiwan would be, well, destroying its own economic, part of its economic foundation. And finally, there is one other argument more from a strategic point of view, saying that the war is not going to happen. That is, that is that China actually wouldn't need to resort to war. China can use other means, for example, political coercion, political infiltration, creating pro-China forces in Taiwanese society and politics, and then gradually leads Taiwan to a position where it cannot refuse unification in the end. These are the arguments saying that no, China is not going to attack Taiwan. But there are, of course, the opposite opinion. One is that I'm backed up by different arguments. First of all, at least in the last two decades, we see the rapid growing of Chinese military power. So that is a, well, factual element that makes an attack seems to be more likely scenario. And then accompanying that would be the change of political atmosphere in China, because since Xi Jinping's ascendance to the party leadership and the state leadership, we can all see that, well, the Chinese Communist Party's control over every aspect of Chinese society is increasing. And now it becomes even more and more like a totalitarian state. And Xi himself is also more and more the only decision maker in the Chinese political system. That means, on the one hand, he could misjudge the situation, and there is no mechanism to stop him from making a bad decision, in this case, attacking Taiwan. And also combining what we just said about the new nationalist approach under Xi, President Xi, which is the China Dream rejuvenation of China. Because in a totalitarian system, one key element is to mobilize the entire society to support the authority. Then this means that in the last 10, 11, 12 years, this kind of nationalist mobilization in Chinese society has been more and more strong. So it also adds pressure to the Chinese authority to score something in Taiwan, in regard to Taiwanese to the issue of Taiwan. Then that is another argument for those who believe that a war is more and more likely. And finally, final point is that I think in the last 4 or 5 years, let's say since around the time of COVID or after the 2019 Hong Kong protests, Taiwanese people started to see an aggression as a more realistic scenario. So we see now in the last three, four years, there are more and more social activist groups stepping up and then organizing events, mostly open course that invites Taiwanese citizens to learn techniques of civil defense, which the key part of it is about how to what to do in a situation of war. How do you help yourself? How do you help the others medically and logistically and other things? So I think more and more Taiwanese society is taking this threat serious, more and more seriously. And finally, obviously, the Russian-Ukrainian war is an important element.
So now you've already touched upon several historical and contemporary events already. But I think the crucial point in order to better understand the conflict is the issue of the complicated yet peculiar legal status of Taiwan. Maybe you could give us and our listeners a broad overview over its history, as well as the role that outside actors such as the US or People's Republic of China played in the creation of Taiwan's, I'd say, bizarre legal status.
Well, when we talk about the legal status of Taiwan, because of the complexity, I would say that let's first distinguish three things. A political entity in Taiwan, that's one thing. And then the territory, a land, a piece of land, as the territory of this political entity. And then the public, the people, the society under this political entity. Now, in Taiwan, as I said, that we all consider ourselves as a state, because obviously most of us do not consider ourselves as a, as stateless persons, right? And but that doesn't correspond well to the external situation. That's where this problem came from. Now, long story short, the legal status of Taiwan is this. The government, under the name of Republic of China, now more commonly in political rhetoric, is called Republic of China or ROC in Taiwan, is a government before coming to Taiwan established in 1912 with the Nationalist Revolution in China. So it's a Chinese government. And after the Second World War, this government at that time representing China engaged in a war with the Chinese Communist Party and lose the war. So this government retreated to Taiwan, which it asserts control under the Allies' consent after the Second World War. China now was under the control of another authority, that's one thing. And it makes this regime, Republic of China, unable to fully claim its standing as that whole China. And then, because of this unresolved issue, the legal procedure that was supposed to happen after the Second World War was delayed. Because after a war, you sign treaties, right? So the winners, the losers, you sign treaty, you create a new situation. So a new order was established, and then people can do business. And so for the Second World War, in East Asia, it was supposed to be at least a treaty between China and Japan, because Japan was the main power during the Second World War here. But because of the Chinese Civil War, in the end, this peace treaty was signed first between Japan and other allies, except for China, either Republic of China or People's Republic of China. It's called the Treaty of San Francisco, signed in 1951. 49 nations signed without either China's. And in this treaty, there is a further problem, that is that Japan merely renounced its sovereignty over Taiwan without saying that then the sovereignty of Taiwan should be resumed or exercised by whom? Here, we are talking about the land of Taiwan. So Japan, in this treaty, basically saying that this is not my land now, but that treaty didn't say whose land should Taiwan be. Then after signing this treaty, the next year, in 1952, Japan signed another treaty with ROC, which is in Taipei now. It's called Treaty of Taipei. In this treaty, Japan said that, well, then we will from now on consider all the people in Taiwan and other territories, the small islands surrounding Taiwan, that once Japan governed, as citizens of the Republic of China. So now you have a Taiwan and some other small islands. The final belonging was not stated clearly in Treaty of San Francisco. And then you have another treaty saying that, but all these people are considered as citizens of the Republic of China. So according to these treaties, you have a group of citizens joining an existing regime that lost the majority of its territory on a land that we cannot say for sure the belonging to whom it belongs. That's the overall situation. This is the situation created by in the first decades after the World War II. But ultimately, the government in Taiwan, the government of ROC, was the government that was part of the ally, one of the ally forces that won the Second World War
and participated in the establishment of the United Nations. So this government of ROC in Taiwan continues to take the seat of China in the United Nations. Basically, for all the members of the United Nations, and then very quickly moving on to the 1950s, there are new states emerging, and they are all trying to join this new system. And everyone needs to come up with an answer to this question, is whether this government, ROC government, is suitable to represent China in the United Nations. Then you have, so during the Cold War, in the 50s and 60s, what's happening was that on the one hand, the existing states, that the state that existed before the end of Second World War, gradually one after the other shifts recognition from this ROC in Taiwan to the People's Republic of China in China. And then on the other hand, the newly independent states, a lot of them, they're either Soviet republics who, in terms of foreign policy, will follow the Soviet Union, which at that time, at least in the 50s, was on good terms with China. So obviously they wouldn't support Taiwan. And on the other hand, a lot of newly independent states in Africa, Africa mainly, and Southeast Asia, they would consider their independence as a result of anti-colonial fights. And Soviet Union and China, at least verbally at that time, in some cases not just verbally, supported these anti-colonial struggles. So they also do not have a very strong incentive to recognize ROC in Taiwan as the representative of China in the UN. And finally, with these two trends, when it comes to the 1970s, the United States sort of needed to make a decision. That decision, in the end, the United States also shifted its recognition in 1979 to the People's Republic of China. And even before that, in 1971, in the United Nations, it was already decided that the government in Taiwan, the ROC government, could not represent China in the United Nations. And it should be the People's Republic of China representing China. That was also, and the United States in the end, not just accepted this result. Obviously it had to, but on the other hand, it also shifted its recognition. That was because of geopolitical reasons. So basically, because China in 1960s, or later part of the 1960s, well, changed its relation with the Soviet Union. So there was this Sino-Soviet split due to differences in terms of policies towards global revolution. And so it was an opportunity the United States could grasp. So forming new allies with China, so to reduce the influence or power of the Soviet Union. Obviously, the United States would seize it. In the 1980s, the global order started to change. We see the weakening of the Soviet Union because of many ex-Soviet republics started to demand democracy. And the same thing, that the demand for democracy also was also observable in South America and some cases in Africa, for example, South Africa, and then East Asia, for example, Taiwan, South Korea. And so Taiwan, as near the end of Cold War, has already ended its martial law era and gradually turned into a democratic system. By that, I actually mean to fully implement the basic rights guaranteed by the constitution of the ROC. On the other hand, China suppressed that demand for democracy in 1989. And a lot of people do not remember it now, but at that time it was a huge shock because Soviet Union at that time didn't do that, at least not to that kind of scale. So why is this important? that this is important because it created a situation where first, at a global scale, China becomes one of the few cases of the unsuccessful regime change. If we define the end of the Cold War as the end of the Soviet system in many states, China wasn't that. On the other hand, with the democratization in Taiwan, then Taiwanese society started to assert their own sovereignty over this regime, and then by extension over this land. If we use a more theoretical term, the situation would be that Taiwan's external sovereignty, if it hinges on the recognition of other states, continues to be weakened, but the democratization near the end of 1980s and the continued deepening of it in the 1990s attest to the world that Taiwanese people does hold the internal sovereignty of Taiwan or of ROC in Taiwan. This kind of split between internal and external sovereignty is a rare case. It would be difficult to argue that although Taiwanese people keep exercising their internal sovereignty, their exercise doesn't count. It's difficult to argue that. But on the other hand, the lack of recognition was also a fact. That is where we are now, the complicated situation. Oh, by the way, the People's Republic of China, they obviously would also have to recognize the fact that Taiwan runs on its own system. The question is only that they do not recognize the sovereignty of Taiwan. So then, yeah, it becomes difficult to come up with a solution.
You've mentioned a lot of very important historical context and historical events. And to get to the question of identity more specifically, how did these events like the Civil War, the loss of international recognition, and eventually democratization, how did that influence Taiwanese identities?
I think the most important part of the identity created through this process is that for generations of the city of Taiwanese citizens, at least since the Second World War, and actually even before the Second World War, there have been one after another events telling Taiwanese people that we are not part of China, all right? Because, well, the story where I started was about the end of Second World War, Japan renounced its sovereignty over Taiwan. That implies that Japan asserted its sovereignty over Taiwan before that. And that's a result of the war between Japan and the last Chinese empire near the end of the 19th century. Taiwan was ceded to Japan. And all right, that is a clear separation, right? Now, ever since then, well, Japanese rule, then obviously you're not part of China. And then Chinese Civil War, which was actually a continuation or resumption of the war between the Chinese Nationalist Party and the Chinese Communist Party in the 1930s, right? And so that also didn't happen in Taiwan. So the most important thing, the conflicts in China that took the most Chinese lives in the 20th century, Taiwanese society just didn't participate in it. All right, then after Second World War, there was the resumption of a certain kind of exercise of sovereign power of China, which the government of which actually stopped running China in a few years. Then that for Taiwanese society, obviously the perception would be that, all right, there is another place with under another authority, not this one, but that one. So again, you do not feel the connection. One important thing, the switch of recognition by the UN of the legal representative of China, by the term switch of recognition, again tells you that we are different, right? And then the end of Cold War, that is a huge, important emotional event. For Taiwan, the end of martial law officially happens in 1987. So in 1987, we started, as whole society, started to feel like the constitution started to make sense, and then the civil rights, basic rights, were all started to be recognized in Taiwan. And then 2 years after that, you see the Beijing government's suppression of the democratic movement. At that time, a lot of Taiwanese people also feel like it was directly perceivable that that is not our government. So over and again, until the end of the Cold War, there has been all these events tell Taiwanese people that we are here, we are another society different from the Chinese society. Chinese authority is not our authority. So that's the most important process that contributed to the production of Taiwanese identity. And then there are more concrete, detailed elements in this identity, mostly emerged after the ROC government moved to Taiwan. The first thing, the certain historical event or phases. The first one is the what we call the 228 incident. Actually, it means the 28th of February incident. It refers to the events or series of events that started on the 28th of February in 1947. So it started with a small quarrel between the gendarme in Taiwan at the time and local small business persons. But at that time, only 2 years after the end of the Second World War, Taiwanese society already perceived the authority of the Republic of China as oppressive, because that authority was in civil war with the Communist Party, with war, it needs resources. And how do you get resources? You extract it from the society, right? So, and Taiwan at that time was already dried up by the war policies of Japan. So it wasn't that rich. It had a memory of being well off before the Second World War. And Taiwanese society expected to return to a better life before the war. But there was a new war in China. They are extracted even more. And Chinese military presence in Taiwan at that time also felt that Taiwan is kind of foreign, because a lot of what we understand as characteristics of Chinese society now, the kind of Chinese we speak now, for example, the unified way of speaking was only created in the 1920s when Taiwan wasn't in China. So there was a lot of misunderstandings and resentments. And then with the quarrel on the streets, it broke out into a wholesale rebellion against the existing authority in Taiwan at that time, 1947. And as a result, from the beginning of March 1947, the troops from the Republic of China, the ROC, arrived in Taiwan and started a massacre from north to south of Taiwan. So that is one decisive event that separated Taiwanese society with a particular understanding of Chinese nation. Because before that, most Taiwanese would consider themselves associated with the kind of China or Chinese nation we understand now, because there are familial relations, there are cultural relations and all that. But a massacre would tell you that there must be something different. Otherwise, how can you justify that? And with that event, Taiwan was put under martial law, and then it was extended until the end of 1980s. During the martial law, especially the reason for its extension was because that the ROC government at that time still wouldn't admit its defeat by the Chinese Communist Party. It still officially announced the eventual reconquest of China. So, and then also because that ROC was sort of under the protection of the United States, especially since the Korean War. So Taiwan was considered part of the free world, quote unquote, while exercising a dictatorship. And so under the dictatorship, one important aspect is to eliminate or resist, to put it in a nicer term, the communist influence. And so in we entered in Taiwan what we normally call the White Terror period in the 1950s, 60s. In common understanding, it continued until the end of 1980s. The White Terror, from another way, also asserted a certain kind of understanding of Taiwanese identity. That is, well, Chinese, because the White Terror was implemented by the government that claims to represent China, then we being the oppressed must be different from that identity. Then it, in a way, in reverse, consolidated a certain kind of separate Taiwanese identity. This is only resolved, I think, with democratization in Taiwan, now with a system and the previously dictatorial system's leadership, meaning the Chinese Nationalist Party, could be considered as a legal political party with other political parties to compete for the offices in Taiwan. That's the kind of historical processes, the important point about the formation of Taiwanese identity.
This is just the first part of this three-part episode. So if you're interested, you can join us again on December 6th, where we'll be diving deeper into the Taiwanese political landscape and how the political parties employ the issue of Taiwanese identity. The third and last episode will be released on the 20th of December, so mark these dates in your calendar and stay tuned.
And 233 will be clear on it.